All right. Thank you. Welcome back. Good to see you all. Before we move ahead, I just want to thank you for coming to this course. It's good to know that the way I present it when I'm talking about spoke to you. And I always appreciate coming to that. I appreciate you coming to the first iteration of something, because I feel like I'm the person in the virtual room learning the most. Because like I plan the workshop, but I never know what it has to teach me. And it always has something to teach. You know, if nothing else, saying things aloud, seeing your reactions and your responses, hearing them, don't know. I think it's one of the most exciting things about it. And I do think this is broaching a frontier of the method that's critical. That we can learn so much from, and that we need each other to do. I just think it's timely. So I'm glad you're here. So it's good to know I'm not the only person thinking about something. Well, I know I'm not because I speak to other people about it, but yeah. So thanks for showing up. And I appreciate your feedback. Some people made comments in the chat, and I was, well, I have a lot to pay attention to at the moment. And it's a little more than I can manage the chat with. But I appreciate it. So one of the comments was about a couple of people pointing out that some people weren't muted, and I missed that. And Sherry's going to monitor the chat more carefully so we can catch that. So I appreciated the comments, even though they were lost in the ether. But we're taking note of that. And Melissa asked if I would write the instructions for the exercise in the chat. And I thought, what an original idea. So thank you, Melissa. I'll see if I can do that moving forward. Maybe you could help me with that, June. Writing the instructions for the
Okay.
exercise, you could send me what you write and then I could edit it and put it in the chat. I mean, for this next piece. Okay. All right. So I am making a comment that I would hesitate to such an extent that I would rarely, if ever, make it at other times. But I want to go back to the importance. I don't want to be pedantic about this, but I think it would be a missed opportunity to not say this. I want to go back to the importance of that non-verbal behavior of the teacher, and the importance of, you could say colloquially, walking the walk and talking the talk, or more academically or theoretically, to be congruent. In other words, to be demonstrating in your behavior, mine and our behavior, and what we say and how we respond to people, to be demonstrating the tenets of the method. For me, one of the basic notions, if you, sorry, too many ideas in my head at once. If you take the ideas from social learning theory seriously, then you would say that human beings, children and adults, learn from the actions of the people around them. Right? And you can see that. I mean, we can see that where you is, you know, sometimes you like you see a kid in a park and then his dad comes over and starts interacting with him, and you can see how the kid's behavior, not the shape of their body, but their not just the gestures they make, how they carry themselves, their relationship to space, gravity, time. They have a really similar movement signature, right? That the child, you know, copies, learns from other people. So I think as teachers, I think this is a challenge of learning to be a teacher. It's learning to enact what you do. So I want to demonstrate, thinking reflectively, I want to demonstrate in my behavior what I am asking the students to do. I don't want to demonstrate teaching because they're learning, so I want to demonstrate learning in my behavior. I want to do that intentionally, on purpose. Part of the job description, part of the aim for every mission, right? And I just did that. Now, I'm not pointing that out to pat myself on the back, right? But by responding to people's feedback, I am demonstrating that I am listening to what people say. I am thankful. I am sincerely, so that's easy. And I will change the way I'm acting in response to what they pointed out. And I'm doing that in public because I want to demonstrate learning, right? Every time somebody tells me, even in not the kindest fashion, something I didn't notice I was doing and that I could do better, or at least points out what I'm doing wrong, I can demonstrate what it means to learn. You know, what it means to make a mistake, because that's what learning is about, making mistakes and learning from them. So I am sincerely, honestly thankful when somebody says that. I do have that moment. I think we all share, non-sociopathic people share, of shame when somebody points that out. I was doing a presentation at a conference on cybernetics. And Herbert Brun, who was a composer and a musician, and a friend of, I didn't know this until I knew Herbert for years, a friend of Moshe Feldenkrais's. I was teaching an ATM lesson in front of the people that were my heroes in science, like almost peed my pants. When William T. Powers was sitting in the front row, I was like a teenage fan girl. I was like, oh my God. Anyway, I'm teaching in front of these people. At one point, Herbert raises his hand and he says, in his very pointy Berlin German mannerisms and language, don't you think people would move slower if you spoke slower? My husband was in the back of the room, and afterwards he said to me, oh my God, I can't believe that Herbert said that to you. And I said, really? I was so grateful. Right? Because I could demonstrate you know, appreciate it. I had that moment in front of the group of feeling flushed, but it doesn't last long. And what was left afterwards was like, oh my God, I have a chance to learn something. And I experienced that really, even though he was kind of pointy when he said that, as 100% sincere. Like he was doing that to help me. And even if he wasn't, reacting in that way. That's the only choice I have. That makes a movement useful. Okay. One of you is going to be me in a few moments. Actually, you'd be better than me because you'll actually be able to interact with the person you're talking to. And you're going to go through the process I went through, which is helping the person, guiding the person to your student, to sitting backwards in the chair, their feet on the floor, and their arms crossed. Their feet as close on the floor as you can, and it'll be easy for you to do that because you'll just have one person do it. And then you'll ask them to pack. You give them the general direction, and then you refine it. You can't say everything at once. Even, or especially, if the person... If what you're saying doesn't directly relate to them, like you're giving them the indication about their forehead and their nose and their chin moving forward together, even if they're doing that pretty well, you still say it. Right? Because part of saying it, it's not about correcting, but it's about orienting themselves, not just one place, but various places to their three-dimensional gravitational environment, which directions they're moving in. You follow, just as a recipe, I know some people hate recipes, but put the hate aside for a moment and just do it, if you can. Just follow the sequence of your head is moving, and I think it makes sense that you ask the person about what happens in their neck. And then you can add on to that, sequentially, there's four areas here, the neck, the upper chest, the middle of the trunk, really, and then the lower part of the trunk. You ask questions, you give them enough sensory cues so that they know what you're meaning, but here, what you're meaning. But here, since you've got only one person, the questions are not rhetorical. So it'll take you a little while to do it. You give the person a chance to answer. If they don't know how to answer, don't tell them what you see, but give them indications about where to notice. Right? So for instance, the upper vertebrae of the upper part of the trunk, it's the vertebra between the shoulder blades. The next section is below the shoulder blade. So you're orienting and the question has to be clear. And then the next thing that you want to have happen is to tell someone or to help them find where the answers are. Like, where do you investigate? What do you notice in order to answer the question? I did three sections, came back and reviewed three sections, asked the person to go from noticing them sequentially to noticing them simultaneously. Right? Some people would call that spreading the attention or making your attention more inclusive. And then I added the fourth area, the fourth slice, which is the lower belly and the lower back, pelvis. And there, I started that by kind of doing a mini scan of where their feet and their pelvis make contact. Because in sitting, those are the support points, right? Those are the places where the environment is supporting the student's skeleton, your skeleton. And that means that any movement through space will be reflected by shifting the weight over the foundation, over those points of support. And what's going to happen next is we're going to go from noticing the movement in space, right? To noticing like when the pelvis moves, how is the weight shifting over the base of support? And you could do more of when your head goes forward, does your pelvis roll backward? Right? So that they begin to understand movement in space with movement in the gravitational environment. And noticing those things simultaneously. The idea here is that you want to develop a sensory picture, which is not just about individual points, but it's about places and the relationship between them. When your head moves forward, your pelvis moves back. You could also say when your head moves forward, like what happens with the ribs below your shoulder blades, with the vertebra there? You arch or round or stay the same. Making those distinctions in separate places, you're connecting them to how the weight is shifting. So the idea is to deepen, fill in, connect them to their sensory experience, their self-image of what they're doing. Not to change the action, maybe to fill in where they're not noticing, or at least to begin to notice where they notice and where they don't. That's implied. And the idea is to do this in such a way that you create moments of shared discovery, right? Because you're noticing these things as you're asking them in such a way that they're noticing these things as you're asking them. So you're becoming aware together, not of what they should do, could do, or didn't do, but of what they're doing right now. And at each point along the way, it's a really simple question. You're rounding, you're arching, or you're not changing shape, for instance. That's it. It's all multiple choice, almost all multiple choice. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm being prescriptive. So you have a basic protocol to follow. A Following Christ teacher is not an actor reading the script of a lesson that happened with a bunch of people, none of whom are still alive. That would be a lesson for ghosts. It is bringing that to life for the people in front of you. But, you know, for now, so you don't have to think about that, follow the outline. Am I forgetting anything, June? No? Okay. All right. Okay. Questions? Oh, yeah. No one wants to delay this? Let's do it.
Can I ask a quick question, please, Len?
Yeah, sure.
The difference between moving in space and moving in gravity.
Well, so moving in space, you have to, there's some overlap. So moving in space means that we are not talking about how the relationship, your relationship or the student's relationship to the support surface is changing. We're talking about how different parts of their skeleton are moving in specific directions. Rivka, I saw your comment and we know what to do about that. Does that make sense? So that's one. And then the other, also about directions. But so if you imagine like where you're sitting right now, Rachel, your feet may or may not be on the floor. Your pelvis is on the chair. And your hands were on the table when you were writing. At least, I think both of them were. The one that was writing didn't have much weight on it. Because then you wouldn't have been able to move the pen or pencil that you were moving. The other hand probably was supporting at least some of the weight of your arm, but the weight of the entire rest of your body, your head, your lungs, your belly, I don't know, your glasses, everything is supported by your butt and your feet. Unless you go to a different position, you are orbiting around that same base of support. You're shifting your weight within a term that Moshe liked, a polygon of sustentation, which is French for your base of support, but the shape of it. So when we're talking about orienting you to gravity, you don't sense movement in gravity. You sense the consequence of it, which is a changing contact with the surfaces that you're being supported by. So when I mean orienting someone to gravity, it's like in a scan where they're touching, how they're touching, how much weight is there, and how that changes over time. Whereas when I'm talking about movement in space, I'm talking about directions and how shapes are changing. Okay, good question. Thank you. Anyone else? Did you capture that, Jude, more or less?
Yeah, I did actually. It's a lot. I didn't have time to, like, as Mark Twain says, I don't have enough time to really shrink it down, but I'm willing. If you guys want my notes of what I just took for notes from Larry, I will put it in the chat, and it's going to be more than you need because I don't have time to edit it, but you'll get it. Okay. And if you don't want it, don't look at it. That's what I do at
And
this
if
moment.
you want to edit it afterwards and send it to me, I'll gladly accept it.
Okie dokie.
Because then we can make for something better for next time. The worst thing that's going to happen today here is I'm going to learn something, and you might too. And that's not so bad. All right. Let's take. As a great philosopher, Kermit the Frog once said, time is flies when you're having fun. But boy, is this going fast. Okay. Oh, cool. Jane just said you'll get a written transcript with the recordings. A transcript written by disembodied pseudo intelligence. All right. Are you ready to do this? I think I'm going to give you a half an hour. The reason I'm giving you a half an hour, now listen carefully, is you're going to go through the procedure twice. All right. Not that you would do this every day, a general. Wise words to live by. You never, no, and I never say never, you never notice what you missed the first time until the second time. And in this process, the second time you're going through it, the student already knows where to look for the answers. And they will have the first time as a comparison, so they can, you're giving them a chance to get better. The second time through, it's easier to notice the relationships between the things, because the first time through, for most of us, we notice the things and the places. The first time through, let's say it could take you 18 minutes, and the second time through could take you 7 or 5. And that would leave you a few minutes at the end to reflect on the process together. So if you need to set a timer, I'm sure you have a way of doing that. At least one of you does, but I recommend doing that. Hi, Kira.
Hi, Larry. Hi.
What are you creating with your hands while I teach today?
A quilt.
Oh, again?
Again, always.
I'm sorry. It was a setup. Go ahead.
So I just want to clarify. So between the first and second iterations, we're not talking in between. We're just going from the first to the second. Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm asking a question, you guys, because I'm confused. I'm on a little laptop. Did I post it yet? Did you see, are you seeing my synopsis? No?
No.
Ah, oh, jeez.
It might be too long, and you might have to post it in pieces. But it will tell you, I mean, because it'll fail.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
Yeah.
I'm gonna, yep, that's
Larry,
what's happening. Okay.
could you review the time frames again? Because I didn't get them.
Well, basically, I'm saying the first time through can be twice as long as the second. So, like if you took 15 minutes the first time and 5 minutes the second time, you'd have 10 minutes at the end to talk about what it was like. I don't think you should take more than 20 minutes the first time. If you're going to set a timer, set it like 18 minutes. So that'll leave you time to go through it a second time, but I don't think it will take as long. And maybe you'll have time to talk about it afterwards. Betty. Oh,
You
wait, hold on a second. Did I answer your question?
yes.
Yeah, okay.
In the
Thanks, Betty.
beginning, you
Betty.
said that our initial teaching would not be rhetorical, so that we can give the person a chance. No, so this is different now. Okay.
No, I'm
So.
sorry. Wait. You're right. The negatives, they're so confusing. Give the person, make it conversational. Let's do it in a positive.
Okay.
But look, it's not like coffee, cookies, and gossip.
Right.
It can be short, their response, right? Either they answer you or they say they have a difficulty answering, and then you help them figure out how to answer.
Thank you.
If you don't have time to do it the second time, make a date with your partner and do it sometime between this week and next week. Why not? Okay. We good?
Getting there.
Okay. Oh, you're still finishing.
Sorry, I'm on the laptop. I'm not on the desktop.
Don't, you know what, June?
What, honey?
You're doing it. And you
I'm
know
doing
you're
it.
doing a great job, which is one reason
Right.
I asked you. June
Okay.
has
I
had
can
practice.
send it out later if you like.
Well,
Okay, cool.
no,
Every
I've got
month.
it all. It's all there. Good luck,
Okay.
everybody.
So there you go. You have a half hour. Oh, I'm being generous. You have 31 minutes. Let's put everyone in their groups. I think you'll be able to access this. Because it'll be in your chat. So, or maybe not. You might want to copy it. Let's give you a moment.
Yeah.
Because I think you might only have the chat for the group available when you're in the group.
Or save the chat, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Everybody
Thank
can
you.
save
Sure.
the chat to their computer and have access to it that way.
Yeah, so how do you do that? Let's see.
Three dots up top.
Yeah, the top of the text from, no, at the very top. Yeah. So at the very top of the column or the place where you are looking at the chat. There should be three dots after the organizer. No, it's the other three dots. Is it there? Yes. It's the three dots next to the little square with the arrows pointing up and to the right. There's an X, there's that little box, and then there are three dots. If you click on those three dots, the top choice is Save Chat. When you click that, look at your screen because it'll tell you where the chat is being saved to at the bottom. There's a green line that says chat saved. And it says show in folder. If you click on that, it'll show you where it is on your computer and you won't have to go looking for it. If you didn't catch it the first time, just do it again. Save the chat. It'll show you. It is not cumulative. So if you want to save the chat that comes after you click the button, you'll have to do it again, like at the end of the meeting. But this will give you the history of the chat in your files. Thanks for reminding me, Jane.
Okay, you guys, it didn't actually copy the beginning of this, which is setting it up. So I'm going to copy the beginning, and it's going to be the last part of it. Well, this is going to be quite something. Just breathe and enjoy. I'm going to.
June, it does look to me like you did get the beginning where it says guide your student to sit. It might be hidden for you.
It is hidden for me. You see that?
Is that how I see it started? It. Guide your student?
Yes. Thank you.
I see it too.
Is that Moira? Or I didn't know who asked. Oh, thanks, honey. That's great. Thanks so much. I won't be redundant then. Okay.
Stacy also said she put it in a Word doc. So if somebody wants the Word doc, send Stacy a personal message, which you can do just by clicking on her name in the chat.
Just dropped it into the chat.
Oh, so she dropped it in the chat.
You can download it from the chat.
Stacy Barrows.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're better together, y'all. Thanks for proving that once again. Okay. Ready? Nancy, I'm glad you liked that. I thanks. Okay. We're going to launch these groups. I'm going to give you 30. I'm going to give you 30 minutes. So we'll stop at 2 minutes after the hour. I did it. I just opened the room. So please accept the invitation. Wow, they just disappear so fast. They grow up so fast. Okay, beautiful people. We're waiting for everyone to come back. They'll be back in 18 seconds. I can use my favorite sentence from the AY notes, whether they want to or not. Lucien, vous habitez où?
I can speak Spanish, not French.
Oh, sorry. But you knew what I meant. Where are you?
Two open mics in the same room.
So, Larry, during our performance, we could hear you guys talking the whole time. And I don't know how that happened, but I thought you might want to know that for the future.
Oh my God, yeah. I think you could send us a message from there.
Can we?
I think
I didn't know that.
That's okay, but I hope it wasn't too disruptive. Did that happen for everybody? To err as human, to truly fuck things up, just requires a little software.
It didn't happen with us, so I think it must have been a thing.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't happen with us either. We were in a group and we had a lovely exchange.
Fantastic.
Ah, great.
Rivka, you're special. We knew that. All right. I don't want to say dying to know, because what an awful phrase, but I'm living to know. What happened? How did it go?
Well, it went really fast.
Yes.
For us, we were shocked that it was over, even though we were warned of how long we had.
You actually got 2 minutes extra because we kind of lost track.
Yeah, similar experience. We thought we had just been 10 minutes, and yeah, it seems like we were going.
Okay, like, may I say something?
No.
I think this points to something, which isn't individual. It isn't personal. I don't think recriminations will help, but I think this is a result of something that we've been doing and carrying on doing. And I think it also, I'm going to lay this without any, I'm not upset about this. This is a report, not a complaint. I'm going to lay this at Moshe's feet, because I think this would be another example of something that he did so well that he couldn't help but do out of his professional formation and his martial arts training, right? He was a surveyor, all trig and angles and whatever. I think Moshe, you know, he was trying to figure out how to teach people how to do this. And I think things were so obvious to him that it wasn't obvious how to make them obvious to other people. And I think one way that shows up concretely is in the history of trainings. I don't think he took the time, and as a result, most of us take the time in training situations to teach how to observe. Trainings teach you what to do, but they do not, for the most part, or certainly sufficiently, teach us how to notice what's happening and how to figure out what to do based on that. You know, and I think that's one of the things, the more familiar you are with it, the more facile this is, the quicker it will go, which means this is a great thing to do, because doing this will help you get better at it. And it also means if it took you that long, you probably, no, I'm being too polite, you definitely need to practice before you do this with your students. Yeah, but, you know, we can't change the past, but you can get better at this. Your experience doing ATM, giving lessons, experiencing them, watching them, will all make this a relatively easy task, because you have the requisite experiences to sort, review, and build this ability from. But, you know, your ability to observe, because the composition of a lesson is an organization of asking questions. It's a composition of questions, not answers. So your ability to know which questions to ask, to know where to investigate, to find the answers, and then how to be able to evaluate those answers in terms of what to do about them. I think you have to be able to do that, to be a good movement detective, to be a good movement instructor, coordination coach, or whatever it is we do. So I think it's worth doing that. You know, and the reason it took time, I'm guessing, is because these questions demand a specificity. The teacher's job is not to get the student to answer a question in a certain way, but to make it possible for the student to answer the question. And that's where simple questions, asking them one at a time, multiple choice or short answer or true false, are way better than essay questions that are open, because people don't know where to look for the answers. And that's part of the teacher's job. All right. I'm ranting a bit, but I want to make sure that I'm not just telling you the answer But I'm telling you, at least as best as I understand it, the reason why. Other questions? Or I reports. I wanted to, sorry, reports. What happened? What stumbling blocks did you occur? What difficulties did you run into?
Myra has her hand up.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Myra.
Okay. So it wasn't a difficulty, but as the student, I kept coming back to my breathing. Am I breathing? Where am I breathing? How's it affecting the movement? So I wanted you to talk a little bit about, in your instructions, you didn't say anything about that, I don't believe, generally, the sequence, but how might you weave that in? Would you weave that in?
Well, I think it's pineapple on pizza. No, I mean, some people like that. So I'm going to say pineapple in, sorry for you vegan and veggies out there, but it's like adding pineapple to meatballs and pasta and tomato sauce. You know, it's just one ingredient too many, and I don't know if it fits. That would be my first answer. Yes, June, I see you.
Well, in your first iteration when you were teaching people before our lunch break, you actually had people tilt the chin up and down and do that in a way that allows you to breathe as you're doing it and notice the difference between...
Did I say that? Because I remember thinking it, but I don't remember.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did, because I wrote it down.
Okay,
But it didn't come out in the last sequence we just did.
Yeah, but I only mentioned it once. So it was like not even a dash in the recipe, barely a sprinkle. Like, I was being judicious in that. I understand your question.
You mean easy on the pineapple?
Pardon?
Are you saying easy on the pineapple?
Well, and I might serve it on the side. When I taught for years in Hamburg in Germany, and my friend who was the organizer of the training, Patrizio Simon, it's his hometown. Well, not where he was born, but he lived there for a long time, knew the place really well. And there's this chef who had a restaurant. I mean, the guy used to be a Michelin star chef, and now he had kind of a lower key restaurant. And he made a business person's lunch during the week that was amazing. It was really small, was limited. And every day he had a salad. But sometimes that was my option. It was Germany. There was a couple of meat options. At least one was some kind of sausage. But so anyways, I had the salad, and this guy was a salad genius. Like, I mean, the salads were, they usually had five ingredients. And it took me a while to catch on that I think the dressing was the same the whole time. He just changed the ingredients. And they were amazing, right? So I think it's the same thing. You, the mistake that beginners make, I'm saying this as a developmental evaluation concept. One of the differences that beginners make is they give too much. I went to a museum, an art exhibit at the museum, and we walked around and saw it, and I was ready to leave, right? Because I don't want to add anything to it. It was amazing. I went with one of my best friends who's an artist, and I'm still reverberating. So I think the idea and the lesson is to make these two layers, right, your relationship to gravity, foundation, your relationship to space, path, clear, in relation to sequence, to how your skeleton is moving, right? These three layers are getting fit together. And you explore them separately, kind of horizontally, and then you connect them. And if you did that with three, you'd have to connect one to the other, one to one, and then one to the other, and then the other to the other other, and then all three together would take a really long time. But I think doing that in a rigorous way is really valuable. And that it's not a matter of diluting it by adding something else. It's a matter that, look, when we say the Feldenkrais method is about developing awareness, I think it would be fair, I think we would agree that that is kinesthetic awareness in general, or proprioceptive, or interoception, whatever version of it you want to talk about. But it's not just sensing ourselves physically, but making sense out of what we're sensing. It's not a million stars, but stars and their constellations. Without constellations, without trinking, we can't organize it. We don't, you know, human beings see and or experience in stories and patterns. And what we're developing, I'll go back to what I mentioned before, is the ability to spread our intention, to not be focused in one place, not to have only exclusive attention, to only notice the foreground and the background disappear, but to be able to notice the foreground and the background, right? To get this global sense. And you can do that back to the kitchen here, in the lasagna of attention, right? Of these different dimensions of noticing ourselves. So, Myra, you mentioned breathing. I'm talking about the space, the skeleton, gravity, kind of fundamental. So we can spread our attention across and be inclusive, or we can spread our attention up and down. It's just a metaphor, but include more than one layer. And I think when we have more inclusive attention, a detail on the big picture, or your whole self in one way of noticing and your whole self in the other way of noticing, and noticing all the places and in the different ways at the same time, that is a change in the kind of awareness that we have, right? That is it is the opposite of being dissociated. It is being associated in a full or rich way. I dare say it's something maybe akin to what the Buddha said when he said that the path to awareness is through the body. Right? That it's about spreading the attention in all these different ways and about simultaneously noticing that. I think that would be, you know, noticing the outside and the inside. I think that would be close to, I would hazard that as close to the description of warrior consciousness. Right? And I think that's what we're trying to develop as a skill, not in a lesson, but across lessons. Like, what do we have to teach people is how to be awake in the moment, how to do that in such a way that you are engaged and that you are not, that the present moment is not determined by the past, that you are living not outside of your history, but that the next moment is being determined independently of what came before. And whether we're talking about a chronic pain pattern or, you know, what it, the way that people talk about it in our generation at this moment, a traumatic response, it is the same thing. It is the antidote to being caught by the past. It is a practical pathway to living in the moment. I could see the wheel spinning, you know, halfway across the country, Myra. I can almost hear them.
Well, it's interesting because you know me too well here. So it gets back to, for me, what am I after? Am I after a better movement or am I after awareness? And
here's my latest. And you know me well enough. I've only said this in the last few weeks, and it is a result of the cosmic car crash I had in December. No car crash was involved, but just kind of a moment of unrelenting inspiration. The Feldenkrais method is an approach to somatic consciousness raising that has beneficial physical side effects. I know you can't put that on a business card yet, but I mean, yeah, I think I have said for years that I'm a movement teacher, and some people have argued with me about that. I might argue with myself about it. If I have to tell people what I do, and I want to do it briefly, I generally say I'm a coordination coach, right? Because it's not about movement, but it's about, I think that's the domain that we work in. But, you know, if you nail me to the wall, I would have to say, you know, on the sensory motor loop version of how do we think about the work, the most important thing is it's not changing what people sense, but it is helping people change how they make sense out of what they're sensing. And that's what makes changes in action possible. I'm permitting myself a long leash in answering your question, because I think, well, because getting to this place makes me think, or inspires me to think, about the kind of homework that we want to give people. And I think the kind of homework that we want to give people is not so much doing an exercise or repeating a movement, but it is developing our ability to sense and our flexibility in sensing, how inclusive it is. In particular, yeah, we want to give people ways of working based on the movement, because that's how you can assess what you're doing, right? It's not just an internal awareness. But in the domain of action, to practice making distinctions, not practice doing movement. All right, I can tell how that conversation has shifted, because I just noticed people like resting their head on their hands. And there seems to be an increase of that gesture. Okay, that's a philosophical part. I hope I'm making it practical. Does that make sense? And in terms of the directions that I gave you in the exercise you just did? Thank you, Betty. The exercise we just did, I would name it, right, as exploring a reference movement with a person. It's, I mean, it is the test movement in the lesson, so we're using it as a reference movement in everyday life as well. You could think about it as, I've taught like sitting workshops where at the beginning of the course, I will say to people, well, you know, people usually come to a sitting workshop because they want to learn how to sit upright to improve their posture. And that is such a complicated social thing, right? Because the uprightness, and it's related to morality and intelligence and your basic value as a person. I would like to avoid all of that. So we are going to improve your ability to slouch. Now, we will have to address unslouching or deslouching along the way, but, you know, looking at the other end of that. So in some way, this is about slouching, technically, right? Because what is slouching? Slouching is not slumping, right? Because when you slump, stay with me now. When you slump, you know, it's like you lower your head. When you're slouching, you're watching TV or you're reading a newspaper. Remember those? Or you're looking at your device and you're in a rounded position, your lower back or somewhere in your trunk, you're rounding, but your eyes are staying forward, right? So if you go from slumping, everything is in a C curve, right? I don't know if you can see me, but you know what I mean. But if you go from slumping to slouching, you have to pick your head up. And now what you've done is you've made an S curve, right? Somewhere your spine is going forward. It thought I was raising my hand, see? Pseudo intelligence. Anyways, you're going from being in a C curve to being in an S curve. And I know in our world, it seems to be that C curves are elevated. We're looking at them, we're talking about them. But I think in everyday life, the shape of the spine is an S. At least, right? There are at least two curves, one going forward, one going back at the same time, and we're meant to be that way. Or maybe it's one more, that would be a squiggle, that's three curves. That could be fair too, but it's not an S curve. So here, this is a reference movement because it relates to a position that people are in everyday life.
You just said it's not an, the spine isn't an S curve. I think you meant the spine isn't a C curve.
No, I meant the spine isn't an S curve.
Oh, is or it's in an, I heard it as is not. Okay, sorry.
Oh, no, it is. Or a squiggle, which means three curves. I don't know if that's really the official geometric definition, but I'm just using it to be explicit. So I think this relates more to, like, we are champion slouchers. I mean, go somewhere where people are sitting, the theater, a concert, a coffee house. Now, people do not like sitting behind me when I go to a concert at Kumbwa, the jazz place in town. So I sit in the back row next to the kitchen. No one wants to sit there, but it's great because I can get up and dance. No one cares. But I'm not sitting in front of anybody who is going to really curse my uprightness. I mean, I can slouch too, but if you look around there, people are not being supported by their skeleton in a position in which they can move in any direction with equal ease and without preparation, right? Their acture is poor. I'm not using that as a moral judgment, right? Which I think is really important to say, because so much of posture is related to the social meaning for us, I think. But yeah. Now, so this is a reference movement. It refers to everyday life. It's a bridge between the lesson and life. We are going to use this in the lesson so that at the end of the lesson, when the person is sitting and moving differently, we will be able to do something that when I first described this to people, some people gasped when I said this. And then they said really rude things, but that's okay. You're welcome to do that, because what we're going to do at the end, what did you do? You created a baseline, right? With the other person, with your partner. You created a shared measure of how they're moving at the beginning. Or was it like the dynamic before picture? It's really limited in the sagittal plane, sitting in a chair, your arms locked on the chair back, so your shoulder joints cannot move very much. A little forward and back, a teeny bit up and down, but not very much. So there's a limited amount that you can notice, which is what happens between the head and the pelvis, and how your weight changes on the parts that you're sitting, the parts on which you're sitting. And so what this means is that you now, you're starting in the same page with the student, which means you have a much better chance of ending in the same story. You've taken the time to enact this idea of listening to yourself, because you've joined the student in listening to themselves, and you've guided them in doing that. But what that means, so I'm giving the plot away. So if you're late tomorrow, this is what will happen. Is we're going to do an ATM. This will change, because you know that's the nature of ATMs. And at the end, with your partner, you're going to have them go back and move the way they did before. Right? Because we know it's going to come back. And when it comes back, for most people, it feels like failure. People go, oh, shit, it's back again. And they slouch more. But now you will have practice making this a two-way street. Right? If they recognize that it's back, that's where the awareness part comes in, then they will already have practice switching out of it and going to the newer organization. And because you have a shared understanding of that, you can help them get back to it. And so you will go back and forth between them so that when that comes back, they'll be able to flip the switch because they will have practiced doing it. Now, some people are aghast when I suggest this because they're like, we're going back to that. We don't want to do that. Oh, that's terrible. But you know, now you are reflecting the fear of the student that the return of the behavior of those sensations is a mark of failure. And you are changing that mark of failure into the next step in learning. I think I should shut up for a minute because I've been prattling on there. Does this make sense? No, Rachel says no. Lay it on me, baby.
No, I'm here. I'm here and I'm listening. I'm just that I'm a beginner and I'm like, what? What? What?
Oh, what? Wait. So I lost you like three steps ago? That was three what? Oh, man. A what?
No, I'm here and I'm listening. I didn't want to distract the group, but
No. Look, you are never the only one thinking these things.
Probably
You're
not.
Often the only person saying them, which is why I called on you. So look, that was the helicopter flyover. And maybe you don't know the terrain well, but I was trying to orient you ahead of time about what's going to come. Because I think it will make it more understandable. In an ATM lesson, let's say, you do a scan at the beginning, right? Why do you do the scan at the beginning? Well, you do the scan at the beginning because if you ask a student halfway through the lesson or at the end of the lesson to notice their contact with the floor and how it changed from the beginning of the lesson, that would be unfair. Right? Because you didn't ask them at the beginning to notice it. You assumed that they would. Right? That would be a pedagogical ambush, if you ask me. Right? That's one way to describe it. So it is fair, it is kind to create the baseline at the beginning. So during the lesson or at the end or both, they can use that as a measure for how they're changing. And it's a global measure. They might just be moving their eyes, but they notice how their body print changes, for instance. I am taking that element, right? That aspect of creating a contrast into the practice of FI. I'm saying you don't have to do that. You don't have, the movement that you're using as a measure doesn't need to be the same movement that is the test movement. A test movement measures the progress of a lesson during a lesson. It is just as important for the teacher as it is for the students, but in a different way. Right, we are using the measure to observe the classes as a whole, the class's progress, and individually the student's progress, and the development of whatever that lesson is about. I don't know, lifting your head when you're lying on your back, for instance, or lifting your foot when you're sitting up, whatever it is. I'm saying for that to be valuable to the student's learning, my responsibility as a teacher is to set it up at the, to set up the baseline at when we start, and to make sure at the beginning that we're noticing the same aspects and understanding them, putting them together in a shared context, which is the opposite of what we often do, or traditionally, which is we start a lesson by asking someone, would you walk across the room? And then we notice them walking across the room, and if you're like me and Lucian and anybody else here, oh yeah, Scott, you can stroke your beard while they do that. I think it works well if you just stroke your chin without a beard, but sensorially, this is kind of a cool thing. Makes you look really smart, I think. People do it all the time. And you kind of go, And you are noticing what's happening in the privacy of your mind. And the student is noticing whatever the hell they notice when they're walking. You know, which phase of walking is important to them, how they interpret it. So you're having a disparate experience. And, I think that's a missed opportunity at the beginning of the lesson to discover something together, to make sure you're orienting them to something that prepares them for what's going to happen in the lesson. In the context of writing and theater, we would call that foreshadowing. As Chekhov, that great Russian playwright, said, if the curtains open, And there is, I've heard different versions of this, let's just say, a knife stuck in the table. You know that knife is going to be part of the story that's coming. It's a hint. It's a foreshadowing, right? And in a way, that's what happens at the beginning of the lesson. You're investing the time with this person to give them a hint of what's important to notice. And you're getting them to notice that not just in one place, but in an overall way. If you watch those videos of Moshe, you will see in every lesson where the filming starts before the person is lying on the table, there are a few exceptions to that. The filming usually starts when the person's walking in. So this has to do with Moshe's idea that, you know, you begin to observe the student from the moment they come in the door. And then Moshe talks to the person or interacts. The student might be a child in the arms of a mother. Moshe might take the mom's arms and move them to move the baby, right? That action, that little framework, if you break the rules, and I advise you to do that, and you speed ahead to the end of the lesson, after the person is back to sitting or standing or wherever they were at the beginning, and Moshe returns to that activity, whether it was explicit, like he asked someone to do and talks to them about it, or it's implicit, it was just in the happening of the interview, Moshe returns to that activity. It is the measure that he uses, just like he uses a test movement during the lesson to make sure progress is happening, so he's not surprised at the end that the person's different because he's been tracking that all along. Bringing the person back to their upright relationship and gravity, reminding them of this, it's like by doing it at the beginning, you go from being in the world into the lesson. When you come back to that activity, it is a bridge back to the world. It is a way of taking what happened in the lesson, and if you'll pardon, not far from the kitchen again, another metaphor, it's giving them a doggy bag. But you prepared it at the beginning. The end of the lesson starts at the beginning. Because if you don't do that, you're not ready at the end. Okay. Not every time, not always, not necessarily, but generally speaking. You know, I'm kind of plopping you down in the middle of doing it and then talking about it, right? There was a little theory at the beginning, but I am using the example of what we're doing, I hope, to give you an idea of a way of thinking about learning, not in the time of the lesson, but across time, between lessons. Like, how does this happen over time? So the thing is, once you've done this, not only have you created something that a person can practice, but you've also set yourself up for the next lesson. Because if you give people homework, you got to follow up on it. And so you can see when you come back to this, you'll see what I'm talking about, this theme that they're going to practice, before and after, let's just call it before and after. You can come back to it the next lesson, and then you will find out what they remembered and what they forgot, and even more importantly, what they forgot that they forgot. And that will create continuity over time. And you won't be leaving it up to the student. You will be stepping up to the responsibility of a teacher. Yeah, because, I mean, that gives them a chance to forget. And it gives you an idea of what's worth reminding them of the next time. And we're Feldenkrais teachers. We have many lessons to approach the same theme. So you can put them in a different position with a different tempo and, you know, help them remember how to include what happens with their pelvis when they're doing something, sitting, for instance, right? I think I have accomplished, you know, what I set out to do today, which is not to argue for it, but to present, to propose what it would be like to practice as if preparing for the return of the habit was one of the things that we think about when we're teaching. We're not done. We're going to do a lesson. You're going to get to practice this, and then you'll get to practice it for 2 weeks and see what it's like for you. All right. We have a few moments left. I apologize for not giving you a second break. Maybe we should stop early to make up for that. Sorry. We'll pretend we're watching, what is it called now? MS Now? And I'm going to be Lawrence, whatever his name is. I can't think of it at the moment. And say, does anyone want the last word or words? I am right. We do end in 5 minutes, right, Jane? Okay.
Yes.
I ended one workshop, like when I was teaching in Russia one day, I think I ended like an hour early because I was just so disoriented in time. What is your homework? Well, we don't have it yet. It's for the time in between, right? You could, if you want, God forbid, that I not make a suggestion. Fair enough. You can just practice what you just did with someone else. If you have someone who would volunteer for that, you know, which is look at the pecking movement. I would say give them a guided tour of that. Not correcting, but naming, differentiating, connecting what's happening when someone does it, making it a richer, fuller sensory experience. Oh, June, that was good. She got it. The Feldenkrais method is an approach to somatic consciousness raising. I am a child of the 70s, not quite the 60s, but anyways, that has beneficial physical side effects. Yeah, I like that. Thanks, Don. All right, well, I've said enough. I may have said too much, and I apologize for that. If the inside of your head is feeling bigger than the outside of your head, just you're having a TARDIS Doctor Who experience, it's okay. Nothing will break or explode. Fritz Perl said confusion is the prologue to learning. So congratulations if you're confused, you're learning.
Larry, we go to 5:45 tomorrow. Someone asked that in the chat, I think.
Same, yeah, it's the same schedule every day.
Right. And in the morning you will receive an email with the link. However, it is the same as it was today. So you can save today's because you'll only get it once tomorrow.
It's also at the bottom of the letter from me. So you have it in lots of places. All right. Well, thank you for your sweet comments. You know what? I'm going to put my email address in here. Now, before I forget, happy Valentine's Day, everyone. You know, the Feldenkrais Method, it's not just what I do for a living. It's not just my vocation. It's what I love doing. It's my avocation. So, you know, I'm spending a day with you doing what I love, which is really great. And I am so grateful to be able to do that in, with my colleagues. Because, you know, we're just a bunch of weirdos to everybody else. So I'm glad we get to be weirdos together. That's my email address. I am not promising that I will respond to it, let alone read it before tomorrow, because I have some other shit to take care of right now. But I will look at it, and I will look at it in the coming 2 weeks and respond if you have something to say. Have a great evening. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Letty.
I'm going to shut the recording off.